WeatherBrains episode number 369, recording this show on February the 15th, 2013, and it's a Friday night special. You know, we typically do these on Monday nights, but due to a scheduling conflict, we're on a Friday night this week, which I think is a whole lot of fun. This is James Spann. It's going to be a great show for me because, you know, Fridays I've had no sleep. I sleep about 3 hours a night during the week, so every Friday my brain is not functioning. I'm cranky. I don't know where I am. I don't know what day it is, what year it is. My mouth is moving, but my brain is totally shut down. So as we often say, this could be the greatest weather brains ever. So thank you. And because of the scheduling change, some of the regulars will not be on the show this week. Professor Peters is out. Bill Murray is out. J.B. Elliott is out. However, we have the faithful, the tried and true, including Nate Johnson of Raleigh, North Carolina. Nate, is it going to snow up there tonight or tomorrow?
Meh.
What does that mean?
It's funny. We did a model comparison tonight at 6 o'clock with Greg Fischel. We plotted out the snowfall totals from each of the like the European and the GFS and the WRF NMM and the WRF ARW and our future cast and all that kind of stuff. And because we've been talking about this, you know, for the last couple of days, and the GFS that everybody seems to be hanging their hat on is putting out half a foot here. In a situation where it's really going to be difficult to do that. That typically this is one of these classic cold air chasing the moisture kinds of things. And not so much chasing, but having a system off the coast throw moisture back at us before it pulls away. And these typically don't get us a whole lot. But we'll see. It's interesting because some of the partial thicknesses that we use to try and predict a precipitation type are off the nomogram on the cold side, which is surprising. Some wisdom from one of the Weather Service guys tells us that this either means that the model is out to lunch or you're going to have an unprecedented event. So who doesn't want to be forecasting that on a Friday night?
Nice. Yeah.
This is good. This is fantastic. I love this. I don't have to worry about it. I don't deal with this. It's not my problem. It's your problem. So.
My money is on it's going to snow. There's going to be flakes. And at least in Raleigh proper, virtually none of it's going to stick. But the water will freeze over tomorrow night and we'll have all manner of slick spots on Sunday morning. Now, an hour and a half northeast of here, it's a whole different animal. We may get 2-4 inches of snow over toward like Rocky Mount, Roanoke Rapids, over toward Elizabeth City. This is actually a really good setup for them to get what is for that part of the state a significant snow. But we'll see how it pans out. I mean, by the time this plays on James Spann 24/7, I'm either going to sound like a savant or a complete idiot.
That's right, because you see, most people, you know, we're doing this really early, so when they listen, they're going to know if you nailed it or if you're clueless. And trust me, snow forecasting is a challenge. People do not understand the difficulties involved. And I guess every market has their own unique difficulties. But where Nate is and where I am, it's challenging. So, and of course, I said we have no issues here. Watch us be buried with 5 inches of snow tomorrow. And we're just mentioning flurries. So we'll find out. But we've also got Kevin Selly.
Hey.
Who is the crank of the show.
Whoa, whoa,
are you
whoa.
Cranky?
Yeah, well, usually, yeah. What number, show number did you say? This was
369.
Wow. How many do you think we're gonna do?
369. I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about to say this might wrap it up right here. This might be the last one.
Let's go to 370 and call it quits. What do you think?
Okay, so we were talking before we started here, Kevin. You say your hair looks gray in this shot.
Oh, thanks. So go right to the video.
I don't think it looks gray. It just looks like you're a seasoned weather veteran.
We have terrible lighting in this particular studio, and they just swept through and put in a bunch of new fluorescent bulbs, and so it's brighter. But it, you know, I hate fluorescent lights, and so that's
They're
why.
Evil.
They are evil. So that's why for all the audio listeners, my hair's turning gray, and doing this program is part of the reason.
So I don't understand television. Why are the fluorescents evil? I thought they were they're not hot. They don't emit heat.
Fluorescents are evil. The color temperature is just all wrong. And when they die, they start to die. They flicker. And they flicker like
you're talking about studio lighting? Yeah, this is just the work lights, yeah.
Yeah, and the work lights are just as bad. The work lights are actually worse.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times if they start to die, they'll give you this flicker that's at a very not quite Visa compatible rate.
Yeah.
For those of you who remember monitors that had Visa compatible refresh rates that were just, you know, all manner of issues. So, no, I hate them. As a matter of fact, a little story, Bill Castello and I, when we both worked at Barron Services in Huntsville, who's one of the graphics designers, we had cubicles in the back corner of this area that was lit with these godforsaken fluorescents. And I cannot confirm or deny that we might have disabled a couple of those lights so that we could put in just the, you know, just the basic little torch lamps or something so that we could have, you know, light with a good color temperature and something that didn't give you a headache.
I didn't know you worked with Bill.
I did.
He was here when we started TXCN before he went off to Kavoris, I think it was.
Which is why I dropped the name, because I knew it.
Where is he now?
I have no idea.
Oh, all right. We need to find Bill. Call us. We need to know where you are.
By some chance you're watching the show,
or if you're a
meteorologist who works with a guy named Bill Castello.
Yeah.
What's up?
Anyone who knows where Bill is, let us know, because he is a bright and talented fellow.
Yes, I enjoyed working with him.
And before we bring the guests in, everybody's talking about the meteor in Russia.
Oh, that was epic.
And this is crazy. So, and again, this is an audio show, so I'm going to play a little audio clip from some of these incredible YouTube videos of the actual impact of the shockwave. Check this out. This is bad, man. This is horrifying. And, I mean, you can tell these people just don't know what to do. I mean, it just keeps on coming. Like shotgun blasts are going off here. So, what was creepy, you know, it started, at least I started paying attention last night during our late news. We had a fireball in the southern United States sky.
Right.
And Twitter will light up like a Christmas tree. You guys know
yes,
how that
it will.
Is.
There's something or going like on. A meteor.
Or like a meteor, that's right. And so, while I was kind of investigating the fireball here and trying to determine how many states saw it and things like that, then I started seeing the reports of this thing in Russia. And so I stayed up pretty late last night just watching those videos come in. It was amazing. But the fireball we had nothing to do with that. And on top of all of this other stuff, we had the asteroid pass by today.
Yep.
I'm thinking about just digging a big hole and just, you know, giving
really?
Up. Here.
I have a playlist on iTunes called End Time.
Oh,
and it got some use. Matter of fact, I played all the way through it today. It takes about 5 hours to get through the whole thing because it's all songs about, you know, the end of the world as we know it by REM is clearly in there. But because I'm a lover of irony, I also have What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
now I'll show you what an old guy I am. The end of the world song I remember is The End of the World by Skeeter Davis, and nobody on this show remembers that but me. I bet you Kevin played that when he worked for that cool FM station, that oldie station.
I don't remember that one. I don't think so.
Which song was it? And it may be the one you're talking about, but the one that was like in the year 3900 or whatever, in the year 4000?
In the year 2525?
Yeah.
Zager and Evans. Okay. That was a horrible song. I hated that song.
That one.
But
yeah.
Kevin, bring in our guests before they hang up on us,
all
please.
Right, let's do it. Well, we have two very special guests today. First, we're going to introduce Andrew Kozak, who has made what so many people want. He has achieved viral fame on the internet for becoming, what, the Tim Russert of graphics, I guess, by doing his weather graphics one morning on a pad or on paper, right? Andrew, hi. How you doing?
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me on tonight. Doing well. Yeah, some paper that was lying around outside the printer. Just kind of utilized that one morning.
Well, it was an amazing run in the YouTube world and so on and so forth. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But you're at KTUL in Tulsa, right?
That's correct, sir.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. Jump in anytime. We also have an interesting guest who is the developer of a new app that's out called Storm Pins. His name is Chris Weldon. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. This is going to be kind of an interesting experiment for us because, you know, James, we both listen to all of Leo Laporte's programs, and he's always talking about the Twit Army, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And so I kind of thought after talking to Chris a little bit that maybe we had an opportunity to organize and see how it works, organize the Weather Brains Army. And... Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
I like it.
I like it, too, because this is an engaged group, and we're all kind of circled around this common interest and common topic here. And I thought this is a really good opportunity for us to gather together and have an impact on things that come out and products that come out and services that come out. And Chris has recently released into the App Store an app called Storm Pins, which allows you to do storm reports and move pictures around and video around as well. Give us the sort of the executive summary of the app, Chris.
Sure. It's one app is the iPhone app, but we've got an emergency communications platform that is also going to be on Android and a web-based version for your county or city emergency responders. And really it stemmed from the derecho storm we had last summer and Hurricane Sandy as a means to improve communication instead of scrolling through Twitter and missing messages. There's maybe 400 to 500, you know, when the storms pop up. If you could put this on a map, and inside each pin you drop, you could have photo, video, text, and an embedded chat room inside each pin as well, or an anonymous tip line. It's just a more efficient way of organizing emergency communications, and we want to reach out to you guys to see what you think about some of the weather things we've added and get your thoughts.
Well, I think that's a good explanation, first of all, to get us started, and I think it's a good tie-in with our audience because what I would really like to do is for, and I'll mention this several times, is for everybody who has an iOS platform to go ahead to find either search on iTunes for Storm Pins or go to stormpins.com, stormspins.com, and just use the app. Because I remember reading, and Chris and I talked about this the other day, but I remember reading recently a fairly famous, and I can't remember who it was, usability person and designer had a really neat quote that said, "No piece of software ever survives its first collision with its users." And Chris has done a pretty interesting thing in that he's putting this thing out, and maybe he knows there are a few hidden bugs here or there, but he recognizes that the only way the thing is going to, number one, work and get better is if people use it. And since it's something that's in the weather space, I thought it would be fun for everybody that can do it on an iOS platform to go ahead and use it. And then,
as Google calls that, Kevin, it's called iterate early and often.
That's right. Yes. Launch and iterate quickly. And I think, Chris, you're going to allow our audience a special way to connect with you to give you feedback. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. We created an email for you guys to respond back, and it's weatherbrains@stormpins.com.
Okay.
So great. For those of you that want to download that and play with it, you know, we built a neat toy. We want you to break it. and when you break it, we want to know how it breaks and what, you know.
And break it, we will.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what it's there for. And we have a product for emergency managers, on-air broadcasters. We think we have an interesting way to do some photos and improve and organize some of those efforts. And, you know, we want to roll this out and get your feedback.
All right. Before we get into the specifics of how it works, tell us a little bit about you, because you and I have visited a little bit, and you're not necessarily coming from the weather community. You have a different background. And tell us a little bit about you and how you stumbled into this.
Sure. My background's been more on the problem solving side of the private equity world, in terms of probably spent 12 years fixing bankrupt companies and all sorts of industries, where you'll go in there and try and find out what went wrong and repair it. And so probably about 6 months ago, I started playing around with this idea. And, we had that derecho storm in D.C. where we didn't have 911 for 4 days. It was 105 degrees for, it was over 100 for about 4 or 5 days. We didn't have power for 2 weeks. Mm. And the county admitted that they had a total failure of communication with the residents. And so I started working on this project. And then when Hurricane Sandy hit, when they were going to run the New York Marathon, and there were still people really struggling in Staten Island, I think it was on a Sunday, and then they finally called it off, it was just clear that the communication effort needed to be improved. And now the technology's there where we could kind of put that together. So I'm definitely not a weather person, but more of a problem solver. And we think we came up with an interesting tool. Now we want to see, what vertical it fits in and really build a platform and then let you guys customize it. It would be a goal of ours.
Right. Well, you know, people coming in from outside the weather space is really interesting to me. And we've talked on this show about, we had the guys from, what's the hurricane one, Nate, the Florida guys, Storm Pulse. Yeah, Storm Pulse, and also Dark Sky is a couple of engineers who just saw, you know, predictive radar as an engineering challenge. So, you know, now that the barriers to entry for a lot of things are coming down, where just about anybody can make an app, it's kind of fun to see people come into this space, and problem solving is probably one of the better, in my view, one of the better qualities or questions that you want to answer when you come in. But so as people go to StormPins, give us an overview of how it works. What is it that they're supposed to do? What are you going to see when you first boot it up?
Sure. When you log in, we've got a two-part login, one for just a general citizen and one for a certified storm spotter. What we wanted to do is have a double email kind of sign in so that you would eliminate a lot of the false reporting or people taking pictures of the blue sky, things like that. And we did a lot of homework on the spotter network to see kind of what, you know, what they were doing. And a lot of people love that, showing storm positions and coordinating with each other. But when you log in, you register. If you are a certified storm spotter, meteorologist, law enforcement, whatever, you give us your certification, and that gives you certain rights and privileges to drop things like tornado pins, which the general public cannot do. Only you can, if you are considered, I guess, certified, which allows you to really take National Weather Service type alerts that used to be county based in a red bar on your television screen, and now it's Polygon. But the other day, I think it was on one of James' Twitter, he had, you know, a radar scope image on Twitter with the donut hole rolling through, I think it was the Alabama border, if I remember, maybe about a week ago. And if we could take that and actually allow you to drop it on a specific location and put your storm warning inside and allow others in other towns to see exactly where it's going and then comment on it, we just wanted to make it a more precise way. So for the predictive part of it, you can go on there, you can drop a pin alert of hail, down tree, power lines, and that'll populate on everyone else's phone. In addition, if your county is signed up or your utility company is participating, all the down power reports could go to them, and they could have a situation map on their phone of all the things that are going on in town. And from there, within that pin, you can load video, pictures, text, and a chat room inside each pin event. That's kind of the, you know, we have a radar feature that's not meant to be for radar. It's a plot more of a marker. We're not trying to be radar scope. But we wanted to give people a frame of reference. But really, it's a communication tool with each other and law enforcement and first responders.
Now, I've been playing with it for a couple of days, and when I first got on, before you and I first talked, in my mind, it was a storm, post-storm reporting tool. And you've touched on this a little bit, but talk about the fact that it is both a predictive tool, and how is that, and a post-event tool for people.
And this is where we want to reach out, or I want to reach out to you guys to really get your feedback on this. But when we looked at the spotter network, people were populating their location and what they saw, or ham radio guys and the Iowa MesaNet website. And then it's all going to the same location, which is the National Weather Service, which then turns into a one-page report. I'm not including the media in this example, but what we wanted to see if we could do is, if you could take all that data of eyewitness stuff, the guys watching the radar, and put it in a specific location on a map, you could effectively give people more granular data on those storm warnings. They also, those pins will fall off at certain times. For example, a tornado pin can drop off in 30 minutes because it's not in the same spot. So you could effectively plot its path, tell which way it's going within the pin. Down trees will be on there for a day or two because those don't disappear right away. So it can be predictive in that it's no different than a storm report or a warning. It's just placed on a map instead of on Twitter or somewhere else. And the nice thing is, you can send this to Twitter. You can't take things out of Twitter. So in between all of your storm warnings, you'll have your cousin Jimmy ate a cheeseburger and it was amazing. But when there's severe weather, you know, there's 400 or 500 tweets flying through.
Right.
It's going to be hard to extract that and put it on a map. So what we're trying to propose is for a community of people to populate it, send it to Twitter. It still hits your Twitter account, but it shows the map where the event happened. And we think it's just a more precise way to do the predictive warnings. It obviously does the post stuff as well.
Right. Now, go ahead, Nate.
Well, I was going to say, because there's the ping project, precipitation identification near the ground, that's being run out of OU. It seems very similar, at least in terms of the in situ reporting where you take your phone and you, you know, it loses your location and you report whatever precip you're getting. Is that, do you see any synergy between these two? I mean, the nice thing about Ping is that they've made their data, well, a couple of people have made the data from that project available to plot in the Gibson Ridge software, for example. Any plans to do that for storm pins? And do you see any sort of synergy between these two?
Yeah, we could definitely make the data available. We don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, that's the whole point of the project. I mean, it's a free app. We're trying to do that. When I looked at Ping, and just correct me if I'm wrong, though, they're looking for people on the ground and give them precipitation reports. But what we're trying to do is more of an emergency communications tool, where another feature of this is when your county or your law enforcement signs up for this, you can drop, let's say Amber Alerts, for example. You know, a child's been lost. You can drop a pin, load his photo, any details about that, a bank robbery, any kind of crime. You can pump that stuff out on this system. Weather is one of the things that it can do. We are, give an example, that we are going to the Fort Lauderdale Air Show in April. There's 3 million people over 2 days on the beach. 10,000 boats in the water. And I think last year there were 55,000 kids handed wristbands, and 105 kids went missing at some point during that event. This will allow you to drop a pin where the child was last seen, their photo. It could go out to the public to look for them. And all the police officers on foot will also have the storm pins version on their phone. And it can do a lot more than just precipitation. But with the how it could relate to Ping is that one of the things that we're really concerned about is, how do you get 1 million or 2 million people to use anything to report for free, like Ping or this? And the user interface has to be extremely fun and easy to use. And it has to do something a little bit more than just a storm report. That's our sense. We don't know, but we think, you know, it needs to do a little bit more for people to use it all the time. And one of the questions we have about Ping is, will the people that use Ping in its current form be the people that would do a storm report anyway? Or is it built so that the average person off the street is incentivized to report on Ping? That makes sense. It's going to be hard to get those people on the margin to become storm reporters unless you make it really easy, useful, and sticky.
Well, my gut tells me that in terms of Ping, that we've broadened the range of people who are reporting it, but it's still not a mainstream thing. And there could be an argument, I'm not sure I would make it, but there could be an argument that you wouldn't want, especially when you're trying to differentiate hail from graupel or sleet, for example, or perhaps more importantly, differentiating a funnel cloud from scud, that you would necessarily want everybody able or interested in doing that. Whereas, you know, like SpotterNet, for example, you mentioned SpotterNet, there's that barrier of entry that you have to go through the training course to be able to actually submit reports into the system. And you mentioned something similar with StormPen. So, I think certainly as it pertains to weather, there's an expertise that you might want, or at least a little more than a passing interest that you might want people to have. But at the same time, when you're talking about emergency communication, like, you know, there's a bank robbery or there's a tree down or power lines out, that kind of thing, you know, that's, you know, you don't need any sort of specialized training to know that there's a tree that's fallen across the road you're trying to drive across.
Right. And those police warnings cannot be dropped by the public. That can only be pushed from your local police department onto the same map. You know, because not everyone's in front of the television when this stuff happens, or, you know, in a radio, you can't really describe what the child might look like, for example. But in terms of weather, we purposely put pins on there that you, to your point, hail might be the exception, though. A lot of people ask for a drop down box in terms of how large is the hail. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we want to rely on you guys to help us craft a really good storm report. If we get a lot of people, I mean, our plan was to go to Oklahoma City and Tulsa, for example, and put this in every aspect of that city, in every form of government and the weather as well, and put all of our marketing dollars in town to have that city get, you know, 50 to 100,000 people on the system in a year. Maybe that's aggressive, but let's say 20 to 50,000 people, and have the police use it and have the National Weather Service use it and generate storm reports that we could then send to whoever wants them for free and kind of complete that cycle. But if you need specific hail data, then, you know, yeah, we don't have that expertise to know exactly what you're looking for and what needs to be in that app for that report to be complete.
So it's interesting because there are a lot of these apps that make it easy. I think my station WREL actually partners with another company that has something similar, where if you hit a pothole or some other sort of public utility thing, that you load in your app and report it, and that's been picked up by one of the towns here. But I'm curious at what point do we hit where this kind of thing merges in with other apps that essentially do the same thing. And by example, I'd say, you know, StormPens, which is, you know, maybe public utility, some weather reporting, that sort of thing, marries up with an app like Waze, where it's car accident reporting and things like that. Right. Marries up with Ping, which is precipitation reporting, where there's things that you see and report, and then the app knows where it needs to go. So it's like, because I drive by, I mean, you know, just driving along or just going through my daily life, I see things that look weird to me all the time. And it may just be that I'm weird and everybody else is normal and everything else is going fine. But every now and again, I just see.
You drive by and see, he sees weird things. Wow.
I see dead people. But the things that, you know, might not register with anybody else, that just for whatever reason sets me off. And it'd be kind of nice just to have an app to point, take a picture of something and go, there's something here that's not right, or that I tap it and it sends. And then the power of that, I think, is the app, you know, you sort of describe, and, you know, by hitting a button or something, it's a traffic accident or utility thing or something. This is what it is. And then the app knows, well, this type of thing needs to go to the police, or this type of thing needs to go to public utilities. Hmm. It's almost like a version of what New York City calls 311, where right. It's anything non-emergency. You just pick up the phone and call, tell them what it is, and they know what to do.
Let me, before you answer, let me add to that question, because you mentioned a few minutes ago that this wasn't really designed for necessarily for people to take a picture of the blue sky. That's what Instagram is for, or the sunset. But there's some point in between a tornado and blue sky that's a gray area, and that's what Nate's, I think, is talking about. You know, he sees something that's weird. So that's an interesting challenge, isn't it? Now, and again, before you answer, I'm gonna put words in your mouth. Tell me if I'm wrong. At this point, you're asking the Weather Brains people, maybe, you know, to take a picture of a cloud or two, because we want to test the thing. Because I know when I opened it the first time before you and I had talked, I thought, well, it's not raining here and it's not stormy and there's really nothing in the forecast, but I really want to try this thing. Is that okay? So there's kind of two questions there.
Oh, sure. And you could drop a pin and put test in there. Remember, this is simply a communication tool. It's not only to be used at certain times. It's, you know, you can put whatever you want in there.
Right.
And that's fine. So we want you to use it. And if it's just raining, people put in that all the time. There's, you know, it's just starting to snow and they'll drop that. It's just a more organized way of reporting it than Twitter. And they want someplace to go with that information. The comment about Waze, I want to go back to that because it's interesting. We did a little bit of work on Waze, and you can see some Waze. I think they raised $70 million in funding, and there's a good chance Apple buys them for their map. What Waze does is they don't really care about traffic. If you read their privacy policy, I don't think they do. They use traffic, so you use it. But what they're trying to do is get a free map, because as you drive, they're figuring out where you're going.
Yep.
And two, since it's on your phone in the background, and that's how they tell how fast you're going, they know where you are at all times. So if Waze collects enough data, they could also say, there's 25 of our users in Starbucks right now. Let's send them a coupon. So Waze is a different way of attacking this problem, and they just chose traffic to get a lot of people on it. I don't think they're here to solve our traffic problems. It's an amazing service, and what they're doing is awesome, but they're really more, I think, going to go down the location-based service model than mapping and then traffic. But, you know, if you see something weird, yeah, I guess, you know, I had a conversation today with an emergency manager in Wisconsin about, well, if you drop something on a map, the people are going to expect that you're going to take care of it. And that's been an interesting thing.
So yeah, let's say, very interesting.
And you brought that up that, well, okay, I see something weird, like the 311 New York thing, and I put it on there. I'm expecting someone in New York to take care of that. And that's not necessarily the case, because they can't respond to everything. They have to verify that it actually happened. And a lot of that stuff will have a problem. And you can't integrate Waze and all these apps into one thing, but getting it to go to a state and local government and having them respond to everything, that'll be a big challenge. So what we purposely did is, if you look at the pins that you can drop, none of them except the tornado is really life-threatening, right? Down power line, down tree, hail. None of those require an emergency responder unless there's more to the story.
Interesting.
And when the police drop a pin of a kidnapped child, bank robbery, or whatever, they are pushing information to the public, so therefore they don't have to respond, right? They're making you aware, and if you want to tip and give them information, come back to them. So one of the things you have to worry about is you can't create a network of all these things to respond to online and overwhelm your local government or anyone for that matter. And that's something they're very worried about. I don't know how New York's going to handle that if everyone's sort of dropping all kinds of information and expect them to respond, because they would have to hire a lot of people to vet that information out if it were, you know, I saw a guy with a gun running down the street.
But
you should still call 911.
Yeah, at the same time, it could be a valuable resource for them. And going back to another Leo LaPorte show, during Sandy or after, Jeff Jarvis was continuously complaining. He lives in northern New Jersey and continuously complaining for weeks afterwards about the downed trees, and especially immediately after the storm. Well, there's downed trees and the power's out and the phones are out. Now, yeah, you can get on your cell phone maybe and call the power company or whoever, the local municipality, but some way to aggregate down tree reports is probably valuable. At least they know then where they are. Or do the municipalities think that the system they have in place is enough to find those things?
Well, we've got a lot of feedback that they want that. And our thesis is, if you look at Tornado Alley, and I think there's something like 1,700 counties, with the recession that we're in, we're making the bet that they're not going to all be able to develop their own mobile app strategy and roll it out through every one of those counties.
Right.
Budgets are getting slashed. So we made a platform where Storm Pins, instead of a local app where you can report, we're going to be on Sirius XM on the Trucker Channel. We've been working with those guys. I shouldn't say we're going to be on. We're hoping to be on, to where we have a platform where a truck driver can use this. And as they drive cross country, Storm Pins populates all over anywhere, Google Maps, all over the world. But as they leave one county and go into the next, they will pick up the alerts of the county they just entered. So if we could string across a whole sea of counties, National Weather Service, police, accidents, all kinds of stuff, as they travel, they don't need to download a new app. And Waze would work the same way, I guess.
Right.
Developing your own reporting app for every municipality is just not possible. So we're going to let them private label this, call it their own outreach program, and start warning each other about the weather and everything else that happens, and let every county have a shot at doing that for a really low price.
Well, you mentioned Tornado Alley. Andrew's in the heart of it. Andrew, what do you think about this? Does it sound like something of interest?
It really does. And you said earlier about this being a really valuable tool. I guess just coming from the TV side of it, we deal with public perception all the time and how the public, looks at these things. I guess it comes down to, are they going to be informed enough to know how to use this and informed enough to know what they are actually looking at? I mean, anybody knows, you doesn't matter what kind of market you're in, you have any type of weather event and people see things differently and respond to things differently. Is there enough information that the public is going to know exactly how to use this tool?
Well, in terms of how to actually operate it and respond to it and use it that way, or to interpret someone's storm report?
To interpret the storm report, I think is people have a different level of, freaking out, we'll say, over.
Got it. Well, I guess we're not trying to change the way people are reporting. We're trying to give you another way to do it in real time within 3-foot accuracy on a map. Mm-hmm. So you can add photo, video, and text as you drop your pin, and it's just with your finger. You just put your finger where you want to go, and that ought to be, we'll find out. That's why we're reaching out to you guys to use it and find out. It shouldn't be that complex of an upload. It doesn't store a full National Weather Service page, alert type page. It's supposed to be shorter than that, but that's where we're hoping you guys can drop some pins and write what you want to write and write test in there and see what comes back. With the icons inside the pin, we tried to make the icons almost like how Waze did theirs, to make it very simple for people to understand what it is. And then we also thought for the TV broadcasters, all those pictures that come into your stations, would it be nice to be able to take those and pull up during your broadcast and pull up a pin and show a down tree or power line submitted by Bob, the user on, you know, I-95, and have all of that information available to you versus filter. Like, I think the Weather Channel gets 1,700 pages of photos on their website. Wow. This would organize it by location and timestamp it, and you could pump it into your broadcast and just touch the, any pin you want, or, you know, leave some of them off. We thought right. that would be another way.
Hey, let me ask this question, Chris. I'm just kind of coming, you know, thinking while you're talking. Are you going to make this a universal app so it's going to work on an iPad? I mean, I've got it on an iPad now, but I got to blow it up because right. it looks like it's an iPhone-only app.
It is iPhone-only. We'll do an iPad app. It's what we originally wanted to do is give Storm Chaser something they could drive around with, like on the iPad, and they could thumb drive it. I don't know if you can see, you know, guys, imagine they're going down the road and it's kind of, you could have the buttons on the end, you know, they're not going to use a phone in the field. So we thought about that and we might need to reconfigure it. But as you see it now, we're just going to change the resolution so your iPad is clear and you don't have to blow it up. And then right. it will do everything you need it to do from there.
And you have Android waiting in the wings. Is that right?
I think we're going to be 2 to 3 weeks away.
Yeah. Okay.
So I dropped a pin and it's got a little picture of a dragon on there. This first time I played with it, and this is just a test. Mine says WeatherBrains host warning, and it's other with a little picture of a dragon. So for people that download this, and how long does this stay there?
So we initially had them time out in their kind of natural life cycle. A tornado is 30 minutes, and then it's in another spot. So whoever spotted it or has it on radar, the donut hole or hook echo or whatever you guys want to call it, plot it where it is the next 30 minutes and warn everybody in that path. Something like the dragon is going to be up there for a couple hours, and that's no copyright infringement, but we thought for other, why not just have Godzilla marching around your town messing things up? That is.
And I see also you can report a bad pin if you right. think there's some bogus information there.
Or expired. If it's been taken care of with a couple of votes, and it's just crowdsourced, and or the municipality can delete it right away, and so could we. But, yeah, if it's not there, it's wrong, it's erroneous, you delete it, and that person gets flagged.
You know, you're going to get these boneheads that download this, these jerks, the trolls that come in here and put in bogus reports to confuse people. That's just the world we live in.
It's yeah. easy to so kick them off. They're off forever. That's why you have a double email sign up, right? You have to have a valid email. You just can't download it without giving your email. And you also can't, if you're going to drop a flooded road, that shouldn't freak anyone out. Those people are not allowed to drop tornado pins unless they prove and give us some certification from the spotter network, you know, National Weather Service, where they work, which county they're in, so we can go after them if they do that. And a lot of the municipalities said false reporting on this would carry the same type of weight as a false 911 call in certain instances. So they'll find out the hard way.
That's cool. And the other question, are you going to have a landscape mode? Because it looks like it's portrait only. And again, I'm just being selfish because the television side, you know, we live in a 16:9 right. world for on air, which is landscape. And it looks like right now you're portrait only, which is the other way.
Well, what we did, you guys mentioned this early in the show, is that the other quote I had heard is, if you are not completely embarrassed about your first launch, you launch too late.
Right.
So we wanted to get this out there and get it tested and then hear that kind of feedback. And if you guys want landscape, we'll do landscape. I mean, where you rotate it to work.
That's just a function. If we had viewer pictures, like you mentioned, you know, images coming in from people and you wanted to take this to air, and I would assume most stations do the same thing we do. They have an Apple TV. You know, airplay it to the Apple TV, and that's what goes into the switcher. And obviously, in a television world, you know, having the thing, you know, up and down the portrait mode just doesn't work. So landscape would be a big deal. And, you know, the one thing the radar scope guys did that's nice on their TV version, it is 16:9. It looks gorgeous. Right. You know, the time comes to take it to air, you'll need that.
Yeah. Okay, so many people still take maybe not everybody, I don't know what the percentage is, but so many people still send in a picture that is in portrait mode, mm-hmm. but landscape mode is clearly better for TV. And I ran across that. That was my first bug, you know, the first time I dealt with Chris is I had taken a photo with my phone and didn't send it from there in landscape mode. And rather than using the picture taking part of the app, I uploaded it from the camera roll, and it did a little stretching. You remember we talked about that, Chris, it stretched it a little bit.
Right. When it does that from the library only, not from the camera mode. We're going to fix that.
Right.
And those are some of the things. And what we really hope you guys would do is if let's say there's 5 or 10 of you in a city, a small community, and over the next couple of weeks when the storms are rolling in and you guys are on Twitter, start dropping these things and see if you find that it's actually helpful to look at a situation map when you're done at the end of the night and you got 10 or 15 pins going on around town. And see if this is something that's a nice, useful tool, or what your feedback is.
Well, I'm really anxious to see. I'm sorry, go ahead, James.
I was just going to say, Chris, do you have any plans to add, you know, weather service warnings and polygons and things like that to these graphics?
And Chris, I think we're getting some noise from you. Is there some buzzing in the background?
I believe that's coming from Andrew's channel.
Oh, it's Andrew? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It sounds like Andrew's shaving. Andrew, you got your electric razor out there?
I'm using a computer that's about 6 years old, so it's...
I wonder if it's... It's probably the fan, because this Hangout thing really makes the processor work hard, I have found. Why don't you just mute unless you're going to talk, because it's gotten pretty loud. Okay. I'm sorry, Chris. Or so James.
The question was...
My question is, are you going to go to some point where you're going to put down polygon warnings on this thing down the line?
We can definitely do that. We wanted to hear from you guys that do we need, the public's probably going to want polygons, but what do you guys think? Do you want them? They're easy to do.
Well, again, you know, all I can do is be selfish here and, you know, do the selfish personal request. But I could see myself using this thing on the air where you've got, you know, you're crowdsourcing these storm reports. And I always like having that polygon with the storm reports there. I would be for it. And, of course, I have the option where you can display it or not display it, you know, where it's there and not there. So, I think it's something that would be good, you know, for what we do. Because it correlates the reports and it verifies the warning. Either the warning is good or the warning is bad. You got a polygon, you got no reports, you know, maybe there's nothing going on there.
I would echo that and add to it just by saying that, you know, the Weather Service is clearly committed to those. And while there are still a great many people that maybe haven't clicked in because we've only been using them a couple of years, the Weather Service is using it and it is part of the culture now. And so as far as people getting used to them and training people to use them, I would echo James's comment.
We can easily do that. And we have a different page on the app. We have one that's clean with just the pins. And we have one that's going to have radar. We have radar. We took it down because we're going to play with a different radar over the weekend. But what we were concerned about is if we had one page that had radar and polygons and pins, and there was a major event, you could overwhelm the screen. It'd be very hard to read. So we had one screen that has all that stuff, and we'll put polygons on there, and then one that would be just pins, so you can kind of take things away. Otherwise, it'll look like a radar show.
It'd just be nice if you could control those layers. You know, you just have the option of showing whatever you want to show. Obviously, for our business, for television, we don't need the radar in there. We just use the reports. But, you know, having – it's kind of like radar scope. Those guys do a nice job with that. You can just take those layers on or off, and it's very simple and very easy to use.
Yeah. Like I said, these are the things we wanted to get a list of everything you guys want, and then we're going to start layering it in on, you know, this and the Android version.
Well, Chris, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just curious, the pictures and the media that people would upload on there, how long would that stay? Would that would go away immediately with the events, or would that actually have like a place or a folder or somewhere that where that would actually stay for later use?
Yeah, we have a pretty huge database and back end to support all this so that we will have a record of every storm report from the day we start, time stamped, latitude, longitude, and everything that was associated with it will have. I mean, it comes off of the app because it's no longer there, but we still have it.
Great. Well, I'm really interested in the project itself, but I'm also really interested to see, you know, how we can rally the WeatherBrains army and get them to use these things. So I hope everybody will that can. Chris, tell us where we can get it, iTunes, and also tell us how we can get in touch with you and mention that email address again, all that kind of stuff.
Sure. When you start to use it and you have feedback, weatherbrains@stormpins.com will be the email address for you guys only. Stormpins.com is the website where you can see all three versions, the consumer app, the on-air broadcasting idea, and the PIN responder, which is your government app. It's all displayed on the website. And in iTunes or the App Store, you can find Storm Pins. And, you know, we're going to be making adjustments this weekend, but it's up and running. I just added a comment to James's pin. You can, there's an embedded chat room inside each pin that you can actually respond to people. So we hope hope you guys try it and give it a good test.
I hope you said something ugly to James, did you?
Yeah, I Roll Tide or something like that. I don't know what I put
in there. That's great. Well, this we're just a programming note. We're recording this program a little earlier than usual. It'll be posted, I guess, Monday night. Just for your information, I think, and James, you back me up, we find that most of the people that get the program do it on audio, but I think it's weighted toward the latter half of the week and the weekend when we get quite a number of downloads, or people at least get used to it. So give the Army a week or so to catch up to you, but then I hope that you'll keep us posted on the progress and maybe come back and tell us how it's going.
Well, thank you, guys. Sorry, I was on mute there. I was typing. Okay. Sorry. Sure. No, thank you. Yeah, and that's fine. Like I said, we look forward to your feedback, and hopefully it's a good tool. If it's just a ho-hum tool, let us know. We'll make it better.
You can't ask for anything more than that. All right, great. Well, Chris, if you want to hang around, we're going to chat with Andrew in just a little bit. James, you want to do the recorded segments and then roll on?
Yeah, let's do that. What we're going to do, we're going to take a break, and we're going to hit WeatherBrains 101 with Professor Peters. We have This Week in Weather History with Bill Murray. We'll come back with the National Weather Roundup. We'll have Picks of the Week. The fog, actually no fog bank this week. We'll have Picks of the Week and much more as WeatherBrains rolls along.
WeatherBrains 101 with Professor Peters.
The last several episodes of 101, we've looked at the various new products which the dual polarization radar upgrade brings. For the next several episodes, we're going to look at how the products can be applied in various situations. Now, with all these situations, and before we start, it's important to remember that none of these products actually just stand alone. As we have learned from the standard Doppler radar products, the best utility comes in using the products in combination with all of the other available products. And this continues to be true for the dual polarization products. So let's take a look at winter weather. One of the most useful applications in winter weather is the identification of the melting layer. The melting layer has been visible on Doppler radars as bright banding, usually a circular area of enhanced reflectivity where melting snow is falling into air that is above freezing. Dual polarization will greatly enhance the ability of detecting this using correlation coefficient, or CC. CC values lower to between about 0.8 and 0.95 with mixed returns. An algorithm has also been developed which plots the CC-based melting layer on the map, which will be part of radar software in the future. How can the melting layer be helpful to meteorologists? If a melting layer is present, once precipitation falls below it, snow becomes either rain, freezing rain, or sleet. Now, unfortunately, there's no real way to differentiate between these three using dual polarization products, so environmental conditions will play a big role, too. In snow situations, CC is usually high and ZDR low, closer to zero. Snow near the melting layer will obviously be wetter with lower CC values and higher ZDR values. In transitions from rain to snow, ZDR values lower quickly while CC values increase even in a wet snow situation. Mixed rain and snow areas will maintain an increased ZDR and decreased CC values. As with nearly all radar data, there are limitations. Remember, typing winter precipitation at dual polarization sites only occurs at the radar beam height, so surface reports and observations will still be important. Also, there are times when there may be more than one melting layer. There are also times when the melting layer is not perfectly circular and blends in with the other data, especially in transition situations. Now, in our next episode, we'll take on heavy rain on a dual polarization radar.
Once again, we consult the dusty, musty, leather-bound weather books in the WeatherBrains office and go all the way back to 1884 for this week's entry, This Week in Weather History. The U.S. Army Signal Corps was in charge of collecting weather observations and producing storm warnings in 1884. Weather map in the morning of Tuesday, February the 19th, that year showed low pressure over northern Illinois. Temperatures over the lower Mississippi Valley were in the 60s that morning. From North Alabama into North Carolina, temperatures were in the 40s and 50s. Now, official weather forecast for the Gulf states called for wind shifting from southerly to westerly and then northerly. For the South Atlantic, slightly warmer, fair weather was called for with winds shifting to westerly and a generally lower barometer. There was no indication of what the day would portend. The first tornadoes of the day touched down in Mississippi during the late morning near Louisville and Columbus, passed into Alabama north of Carrollton. A deadly tornado touched down near Oxmoor at 1:20 p.m. The tornado roared northeast through the new industrial town of Leeds, southeast of Birmingham. The tornado was deadliest there, killing 13 people and sweeping away many homes. Now, about 2:30, what was likely an F4 tornado roared from the sky near Jacksonville in East Alabama. This would be the deadliest tornado of a very deadly day. 10 people were killed in Germania, now Piedmont. 14 people died at Goshen. The school at Goshen was blown to atoms, killing the schoolmaster and injuring many of the children. This tornado killed 30 people along its 35-mile path into Georgia. The state of Georgia was especially hard hit that day. In fact, the day is still Georgia's deadliest tornado disaster, with at least 69 fatalities from 17 significant tornadoes. Now, the tornado rampage would continue into the Carolinas during the late afternoon and evening. One of the deadliest tornadoes of the outbreak killed at least 15 people around the community of Philadelphia, North Carolina. Now, the outbreak is known as the Enigma outbreak, and it's so called because the true death toll is really an enigma. Because the storm struck mainly across the rural South, newspaper reports and records are scarce. Official Signal Corps records indicated 182 fatalities. When Tom Grizulis' Tornado Project researched the event, they set the final death toll at 178. Over the years, estimates have ranged as high as 2,000, however, since it is believed that many of the fatalities were poor African Americans who were not counted in those days in the rural South. The number of tornadoes is also uncertain, but Grizulis counted at least 37 significant F2 or higher rated tornadoes. That's a look back at an event that is a bit of an enigma from the pages of This Week in Weather History. Follow my daily weather history tweets on Twitter. I am WXHistorian at twitter.com.
All right, time to look at the weather around the great fruited plain of the United States. Again, we're doing this on a Friday night. It's the 15th, and Nate has just told us it's not going to snow much in Raleigh, and that's all we need to know, really. It's going to turn cold quickly for the east, and to me, the most interesting thing is we're doing this show on the 15th. The SPC guys have a day 7 severe weather risk today. Did you guys see that?
Day 7.
And day 7, man, these guys are good.
We're going to start making PGA commercials about the SPC forecasters. These guys are good. Yeah,
they're good.
It occurs to me that now that we're going to start, you know, all those calls that you get every year right after Valentine's Day when the bride to be calls you and says, "Yeah, I'm getting married in June," and we're going to have to start answering those questions now.
My marriage date is June 6th. What's the weather going to be like that evening? Yeah. About 7 o'clock.
Exactly.
And they ask you, you know, in March.
Right.
But no, day 7 is on the 21st, and we'll see how that plays out. There's a lot of, you know, water to go under the bridge before that happens, but sure looks like the pattern is going to be very active with a lot of northern snow and southern storminess as we wrap up this month and get into early March. So we'll keep an eye on that. But it is time now. We're going to see if Nate by chance has a little abbreviated email inbox segment because it's that time.
And this week, the stack is, short. There's not a whole lot.
It's got to be.
Yeah, we're going to dig through it anyway.
We did this show like 2 days ago.
Yeah, I know. But, yeah. You know, we'll dig through it. And one email from Mary Harpster, who says she just loved the JB episode from the previous week.
Yay.
Enjoyed it immensely. Woo. And judging from his grins and twinkles, he did as well. Didn't realize that JB was twinkling, but I'll take Mary's word for it. It was good.
He probably just had some gas or something. You know?
I have a suggestion, yeah. James. Instead of the bell, yes. Can you use the exploding meteorite over Russia?
Yeah.
Well, I've got this.
That's about it. And did James, you by any chance pull the YouTube video of the weather Valentine? If not, we'll save it for next week.
Yeah, let's save that one for next week. I have not had a chance to do that.
Well, in that case, that's it. There's no more email. We're done. All right.
Yeah,
I'm out.
It's been a very, very short week. So we're going to go now to, I guess, Kevin, talk with Andrew for just a little bit.
And, yeah.
Andrew, you work for KTUL, right?
We are, I guess, company cousins, I guess
you would say. We're like brothers.
Yeah, I mean,
come on. We're all in the family. You know, we've had a lot of Albritton people on here. We've had Bob Ryan came on of Channel 7 in Washington. And we actually had an Albritton weather summit here back in the fall of 2011. And I don't think you were in attendance that day. I believe Frank came down. But that was fun. So tell us about well, Kevin, you go ahead. I'm sorry. This is your interview. I'll ask the personal, selfish questions later.
Very good. Well, yeah, Andrew made some fame here. It's amazing to watch things go viral. And your video from, a couple of weeks ago, I guess, was you do the morning show, right? Weekdays.
Yes.
And you walked in at what time did you get in for that shift?
Oh, boy. I think that day I got in about 2:15 in the morning.
And was the computer down they're talking about the weather graphics computer. It was down or it went down while you were working?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is on the Friday before, I got a note from the evening shift saying that we had a hard drive failure. So we had one computer and a backup. So I knew that going in. So I felt I'm fairly confident with a new hard drive on order, things would be good. So I sat down, got myself some coffee, and, did a forecast. And I don't actually do graphics until about 4 o'clock. And the show starts at 4:30. So it's not until about 4 o'clock that I realized, oh no, this is not working.
with not a lot of time. So it didn't work. And you pulled out, what was it, a notepad or what?
The first thing I did was I called our vendor and said, help us. we have to do something.
And then, let's don't beat around the bush. Which one was it? Let's just name them out.
It's WSI, the fine folks at WSI.
Okay. All right.
We're good friends with them. It just had things like that happen. You know?
And that's the thing. I mean, and that's the one thing that we kind of hit across the board is it doesn't matter what system you have, who provides it. It's a computer and it's going to happen. But it was one of those perfect storms. You know, you had a hard drive down, the backup doesn't work, and this happened. So, we were told we were going to get it back, but I guess everything had to be backed up over our internet connection. And that took at least about an hour, hour 15. So I sat there and we pushed weather back. You know, show starts at 4:30, and as you can imagine, attendance or viewership on that show probably isn't as high as it would be 5-6 o'clock. So we pushed weather back, and probably about 4:45, I said, we cannot push weather or not do weather any more than this. And I just sat around and I was thinking, what am I going to do? And I just happened to see pieces of paper that were stacked by the printer. Somebody, I guess, forgot to load it up, and markers, and said, well, let's just do that.
So you didn't start the process of graphics until 4:45.
Yeah, and hand drawn graphics till 4:45. Yeah.
And how many of them did you ultimately make?
Oh boy. Well, the funny thing is, I didn't have to update the.
I should say, what was the first one first?
The first one I did was the day planner one. Okay. I always do that, like the 7, the 12, the 5. Did that.
Right.
Kind of did that and did like a today graphic, and then I wanted to get the 8-day plan done as quick as possible, because I feel like, people care about the day planner. They want to know how their day's going, and then they want to know what the rest of the week, the weekend's going to be. So get that out of the way. And then I went in and, the radar was easy because it was clear for that day. So that was a pretty easy one to do.
Now, and take this in the spirit intended. You're not an artist, right?
No, not by trade.
So these are what? Sharpie on a piece of copy paper to the best of your ability.
To the best that I could, I use the edge of a book that I found to draw some straight lines if I could, and I use some mark or some highlighters to give it a little bit of color.
Yeah.
But the most interesting thing that comments that I got from it, and the other thing too is I'm not going to take the credit for being the first person to do this. I've actually done this before at an older station. This is the age of YouTube and the age of things going viral, but, the most interesting thing and feedback I got was it didn't occur to me not to put our sponsorship logo on the top right-hand corner. I just felt like I wanted to if I'm going to hand draw this, I might as well just
right,
kind of recreate what it really is. And it didn't occur to me until that's what people were commenting on more than anything else.
So ultimately, how many graphics did you make on paper?
Oh, probably about 10.
And so you're saying people are commenting about, like, the sponsor and whatnot during the program. You're getting this feedback?
We're getting some feedback from that. I mean, it was all in good spirit. People were right, you know, on Facebook and on Twitter saying things. But that was the number one thing, was that Toyota sponsorship.
And so when did you get a sense that this thing had kind of emerged beyond Tulsa?
2 o'clock in the morning, as soon as I woke up the next morning. It was kind of strange. I every morning we update the forecast on the web and we cut a video. And I just thought to myself, well, I'm going to cut a video from this, because I actually did get graphics back working about 6:45, so about 15 minutes before the show ended.
Okay.
So I used that as the forecast, figured, oh, that would be kind of funny. We'll get a laugh or two and that would be the end of it. And I woke up the next morning and I got a couple of messages from people as I was getting dressed for work, that it was on TVSpy.com, and then it was on a Dutch website.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Don't ask me.
This isn't some kind of porn website or something, is it?
No, it was a Dutch. I should have been more clear. It was a Dutch news website.
Okay.
I can't for the life of me figure out how they picked it up. And then it was Daily Mail UK, which is a UK news publication, and then it just blew up from there. And then I started getting assignment desk started getting calls from ABC and CNN, and I'm just kind of floored. I had no idea that was going to happen.
Have you gotten any job offers?
Yeah, no kidding.
Really? Come on now, tell us.
I had a couple of news directors. I had a couple of people inquire. I had an agent.
Yes.
I had an agent call me.
Nice.
Yes. But I it's funny because this one guy asked me, you know, I'm fairly new. I was at the Fox affiliate here in town for the last 2.5 years, and then I was freelancing here at ABC. And then after a couple of months, we just kind of said, all right, let's make something happen. So I signed a contract recently, and I had somebody tell me, let's get you out of there. And it's not. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, this was a nice little 15-minute thing. I'm not going to, no. And it's just very interesting.
So you mentioned ABC and CNN. Where else did it end up?
Oh, boy. Well, it was on a bunch of different websites that, you know, do viral video. I forget if it is it Cheeseburger.
I can has cheeseburger. Yeah,
cheeseburger. I thought it was Cheeseburger, but it was on Cheeseburger. which, and then it was on the ones that they put, is it fail blog, where they put the fail word or the win word?
Oh, no.
But it had the win word. So I was happy.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And just a bunch of YouTube channels picked it up that shared it. And, you know, I did a little search on my name after this just to make sure I wasn't seeing anything crazy. Because, when you go viral, when something goes viral, you always, CNN, ABC, and, you know, the biggest thing was Anderson Cooper. When I made the ridiculous, I thought that was, but he did it in a good way. He called it the best forecast ever, which I was honored because I thought that was, but it was a cool thing. And, something I'll remember and, obviously
sure
keep.
So what's the furthest point distance wise from Tulsa? You mentioned, I guess, the Netherlands, a Dutch website.
I have a good friend of mine that just moved to China, Shanghai, for work. And he was getting dressed in the morning and said that he was half awake getting dressed and still jet lagged because he just kind of moved there. And there he saw me on TV on Chinese.
Wow.
So you know what's going to happen now, Kevin? All these weather guys that listen to this show, they're going to fake an outage. They're going to say their computer's down, and they're going to go to these hand-drawn little graphics trying to get some fame like Andrew's had here.
Now, did I not say, like 2 weeks ago on this program, that you or somebody needs to go back to the old magnetic board, right? See?
That's it, man. That's right. That's it.
All right, Andrew.
I'm the only guy here old enough to remember doing that. I used to do that. When I started doing this, we had a magnetic board with little stick-on highs and lows and fronts. And even before that, I had a marker where I was drawing with a marker on these things. So, you know, when we got the magnetic stick-on deal, that was big.
Yeah, I remember watching that when I was a kid, James.
Oh, please.
Lee Kinard and the Good Morning Show on WFMY in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I remember getting up and watching, waiting for them to tell me that the Winston-Salem Forsyth County schools had been closed for the day.
The best guy down here in the South, there was an old guy on TV who was riding behind this plexiglass, and he could write backwards.
Yes. Yeah.
That guy was awesome. I forget which. I remember, I want to say it was like Columbus, Georgia, or maybe Atlanta. Yeah. But that guy, this glue bottle thing. And man, he was just writing, and it would come out looking fine, but he was behind the glass. So that was a whole different era back then.
And the late, great Don Woods, who worked at my station here, he created Gusty, which was a cartoon character that he would go and draw all the time. And they actually proclaimed a day for him. And he just passed away a couple of months ago, he was famous for doing all the drawings and everything like that too.
Recapped the first week of my broadcast meteorology course at NC State, by the way. Just so
Andrew, how many YouTube hits did it get? Do you know how many hits?
I have a friend that works in he does like analytics, and my personal channel it was 40,000, 45,000, something like that. But
that's amazing.
But it had gone on, but different sites, copied that and uploaded it themselves. So it's kind of hard.
A couple hundred thousand, probably, easily.
Yeah, I haven't added it up, but something like that.
Truly amazing story.
Hey, who put the video up? Did you do it, or somebody at the station, or just a third party somewhere?
I put the video on our KTUL website, just the forecast part as that morning's video forecast. And then somebody
like you do every day.
Like I do every day, right. Yeah. I just figured I would do that because, hey, it's something different, and, it's the morning show. It'd be different if it was, a night show or something, a little bit more formal. But then somebody grabbed that, and then our assignment desk is responsible for putting the raw stuff on, because that was what CNN and some of those national ones had asked for, was the raw stuff.
Well, Andrew, congratulations on your success, and nice job. And I can guarantee you, you're not going to get any recognition for being on this program, so don't expect that.
Well, I'm honored to be a part of this. Thank you guys so much.
All right, James, back to you.
Now, you guys can't go away because we're about to wrap up here, but we have to do picks of the week. We go around, and everybody shares something that is weather-related. This can be a website. This can be a book, hardware, software. Apps, whatever. So I get the idea, and I know what Chris is going to pick, but we're going to go around and first off,
you think?
Most of you guys probably saw me post this earlier tonight. My pick, it is the weather toaster.
Yes.
You guys see this?
Yeah, buddy.
Now, this is great. So a toaster burns out the day's weather forecast onto your bread.
I am so thrilled to see this, because you remember that was an actual thing that showed up on the GizWiz program like 3 or 4 years ago, because I sent it to Dick DiBartolo, but it was this giant coffee table sized thing, and it didn't have any case on it and all these wires hanging around, but it did just that. And so I'm just thrilled to see that it's an actual product. I think that's fantastic.
And it comes in colors. Look at all these colors. You got black and green and red and white and blue. And,
so where do you get it?
The more important question is, where does the forecast come from? Because if it's a crap app, then that's crap toast. Well,
yeah, that is the ultimate crap app with crap toast. Somebody said on Google Plus, that thing's bogus because it's got raindrops and 14 degrees. I'm only hoping that it's 14 degrees Celsius. It's got to be what that is. But we'll put a link up on weatherbrains.com. What we have to do is get one of these affiliate accounts where if somebody buys some of this junk we're peddling on here, we get like a cut. So, but anyway, we'll put the link up on weatherbrains.com. So my pick is the weather toaster. Let's see if Kevin has a pick for us this week.
I'm going to do actually two. I'm going to follow your lead. These are both from Andy Anatko on the MacBreak Weekly program. Neither has to do with weather, but one has to do with this program. And I am a big, big, big podcast listener, obviously, because I'm on a podcast, but I listen to a lot of them. And the podcast app that came out some months ago from Apple is a disaster area. And I tried it and I took it off, and then they came out with it again and I tried it again, and it was just terrible. And last MacBreak Weekly, Andy mentioned one called Downcast, and he went and looked at all of them, and it is fantastic. It downloads this program and every other program, so it's for iOS. I think it was actually written by a guy maybe at UNC or somewhere near you, Nate. I tried to track it. It's just one guy that kind of wrote it, but it's a fantastic app. And again, it's called Downcast, and it's a podcast player. And the other one from Andy, just because it's Andy and I've always wanted to mention it, and I'm actually going to show it on TV, but I'll describe it as well. It's from a company called Gridit, and it's called a Cocoon. And they come in different sizes, but you know, everybody's got a bag with their stuff in it. But you know, when you carry around a laptop or a tablet or whatever it is, you got to have headphones, and you got to have the cables, and you got to have the power brick, and blah blah blah. So this thing has got a bunch of little fabric and rubber bands that crisscross over the entire surface, and it holds all your stuff together, and it just slides right into your bag. So again, it's called the Gridit. You can look for it on Amazon. The actual product, I don't know why it's called Cocoon. Gridit is the manufacturer, GRID-IT, James.
Cool. Very nice. I like that. All right, Nate, what's your pick of the week?
Well, I'm going to be somewhat serious and stodgy and whatnot, and pick the new...
A little academic.
Yeah, you know. Yes. The new... Well, it's a new app from the American Meteorological Society where you can read the bulletin of the AMS, the digital version, in an app. And it also gives you access to all of the previous material that's been released digitally from the AMS. Great way to keep up with what the society is doing. You don't have to be a I don't think you have to be a member of the AMS to get to read the bulletin online. I think it's available for anybody. So you can download the app if you're interested in that and keep track of what's going on with the AMS. And interesting, I just want a side note on this. Really interesting conversation this morning. The new president of the AMS, Marshall Shepard, who's a professor at the University of Georgia, was in front of the United States Senate yesterday, a Senate committee giving testimony on an overall average change in the long-term weather patterns of the planet, if you catch my drift. And okay, fine, climate change. And anyway, he gave some comments and some testimony in front of a Senate committee, and Roger Pilkey Jr. from Colorado was engaging with him on a very interesting, very long Twitter conversation back and forth this morning. If you're on Twitter, check that out. It was really interesting. And I like Dr. Shepard's approach in terms of trying to welcome in more, I don't want to say independent voices. That's not really a fair thing, but because I think there are a lot more independent folks than a lot of folks on either side give credit for. But at the same time, trying to bring in more people into the global warming climate change conversation than just those who think that the IPCC isn't going far enough, that there are some other opinions. And maybe you agree that it's happening, but maybe don't agree that it's as big a deal or that, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I appreciate that, and looking forward to potentially having them interact on a stage at an AMS meeting near you.
Hey, I agree. And you know, I am very impressed with Dr. Shepard. No, I don't agree with everything he says. And I thought
Pilkey's sure piece didn't today.
No, and it was very well done. I mean, look, I've been doing this, you know, for 500 years, and I see no empirical evidence that there's any increase in extreme events. I just don't see that. There's no peer-reviewed paper that supports any of this stuff, and he made those comments. But Dr. Shepard is so good in that he's engaging people from both sides of this argument, and he says he welcomes differing opinions in the society. That was off a tweet he had today, and that is wonderful. So I just think the fact that he's so open and so accessible is a wonderful thing. And let me also say this. us. He was scheduled to be on the show this week, but due to this funky schedule we had to adopt, we had to move him around. But Bill Murray, he's going to reschedule him, and he'll be on soon. But he is really reaching out to all branches of the AMS, everybody in the weather enterprise with different opinions. And I really like what this guy's doing. I really like him. So I look forward to getting him on the show.
I think the AMS membership did the society a favor by electing him this year. Not saying that the past has been bad, but it's a different style of leadership, and I think it's most welcome.
I do too. All right. Now, Chris, it is time to go to you, sir, for your pick of the week.
Pick of the week.
Probably know what it is, but just pick away.
After hearing Andrew's story, I have reconfigured the Storm Pins app, and the little dragon is now on paper. If this gets me 200,000 to 300,000 downloads, I will have this doing it anything you want. There we go.
You've got to put a logo sponsorship on there, Chris.
That's right.
Was it Toyota?
Maybe.
So let me try to get that up there.
All right. Fantastic. Andrew, what's your pick of the week?
You know, mine's something for the kids. Actually, it's funny. I've turned this into we actually are asking kids now to send in their hand-drawn forecasts, and we show them every morning. So this is a – and I've been kind of tying it in with trivia, going to the schools and getting them in. So I like this website because it's really simple. This is something for the on-air Mets too, for really simple quizzes and weather trivia for the kids. And, you know, they love that stuff and eat it up. And I like this website a lot.
Excellent.
And again, for those that are listening, we put links to all of these sites up on our website, weatherbrains.com. We'll gather those and put them up in order. So thanks, guys. And I do believe, looking at the clock on the wall, I've got to go in on the television side. But again, let's go back to Chris. Now, Chris, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, you've got this email address set up for our audience. So once again, it's weatherbrains@stormpins.com, right?
That's right.
Okay, so that makes it nice and easy, and we do want to ask everybody, let's kind of crowdsource this thing, get in there and play with it, and again, I really think we're going to have some very active weather in the next month, and you know, probably beyond that.
Just across not the Raleigh southern states. Tomorrow.
That's right. No snow in Raleigh. We know that. There's no need to drop any pins other than no snow. But download that thing and let's try it. And if you have some comments, you can get in touch with Chris with that email address or suggestions. That's the deal. And Andrew, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that? You on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter.
What's your Twitter ID?
It's Twitter. It's Andrew _ Kozak. Somebody already had the full name. It's Andrew _ Kozak, or my Facebook. We're always constantly doing that. It's just facebook.com/AndrewKozakWeather, all one word.
Okay, cool. Well, guys, thanks a lot for being on the show this week, and that's going to wrap it up. Typically, we do the show on Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, but again, due to let me just air it out here, okay? Our son plays baseball in high school, and their first game is Monday night. And being a dad and kids grow up too fast, this guy's in the 10th grade. I mean, before you know it, he's gone. So I'm not going to miss any of those games. So that's the reason we moved it around this week. But typically, we're Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. You can watch this live, the video stream, at live.bigbrainsmedia.com. We know most of you listen via your favorite podcast app. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is email@weatherbrains.com. All of our Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts are up on the website as well. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. God bless.